Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. The problem of how the criminal justice system interacts with those living with mental illness is a persistent problem increasingly in the news. News about the risk to public safety from the small subset of people with mental illness who are prone to violence are easy to find right now. There was the arrest of Daniel St. Hubert, a man who wasn't fit to stand trial for a crime that eventually sent him to prison, now accused of stabbing two children, killing one of them just over a week after his release. And there are the risks for the mentally ill, concerns over their civil rights, but also their safety, as encounters with the police have led to shooting deaths and those recent deaths in Rikers. The mayor has set up a task force to see if there are better ways to handle these interactions. And I'm joined now by the co-chair of the Task Force on Behavioral Health and the Criminal Justice System, as it's officially known, Elizabeth Glazer. She is the director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, who has worked in leadership positions on federal, state, and the local level, and a former director of the Center for Court Innovation. Elizabeth Glazer, welcome to WNYC today.
Thanks very much, Brian. Very happy to be here.
The Task Force Executive Committee, I see, is made up of almost 20 city officials from both the law enforcement and the social service agencies. Is the thought that those two arms of city government are working at cross purposes now?
Well, I think the idea is really an affirmative one, that everyone is working hard on this issue, but that we haven't had the kind of comprehensive look across all lines of how we could do this better. And so the people at the table at the task force are those folks who are deeply involved in the operations of both the criminal justice and the mental health system and the places where those two systems intersect.
Here's Mayor de Blasio speaking at a press conference last week where he was asked a question about the stabbing case.
We believe there's a fundamental problem in this city, in the state, in this country. That the prison system has been used as a de facto mental health system for too many individuals.
So does having a case like that of Daniel St. Hubert or the escapees from Creedmoor help by focusing the public's attention on this issue, or does it make it more difficult to talk about diverting the mentally ill from the criminal justice system when news about an apparently violent criminal is prominent and scares people?
You know, I think it's sort of a mix. I think that we need to be able to focus in a very clear-eyed way on what works for who. So people who pose a risk to others in the community and who have committed crimes, I think that there's broad agreement that those folks should be incapacitated. But there's a broad range of people who could be better served, both them personally and the purpose of, you know, reducing crime in our neighborhoods, if they were connected to appropriate treatment, both inside the system and outside the system, because many of the people who potentially find their way into the system could be better better treated outside.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer with Elizabeth Glazer now, who's co-chair of Mayor de Blasio's Task Force on Behavioral Health and the Criminal Justice System. And I wonder if anybody with personal connections to this issue would like to call in at 212-433-WNYC, this being so much in the news right now and affecting so many people with Rikers and other things. I understand the task force is going to look at five areas of contact: arrest, arraignment, incarceration, release, and home. So let's go through at least a few of those and talk about some of what's being done and what kinds of strategies the task force might explore. So let's start with arrests. I saw the stat that the NYPD gets 100,000 calls about emotionally disturbed people, And is a police response the only option for 911 calls of that nature every year?
Well, I think that's exactly the question that the task force wants to look at. I think that we were all, our attention was very much called to this issue again by the death at Rikers of James Murdo, who was a homeless man who the police picked up on a trespassing charge. The question is, was that the appropriate response, and did the police have options to do something different? When that case got to court, did the district attorney have options about what to do rather than to hold him on, without bond? So I think that piece of the task force is going to be very much focused on what are the options to safely address the issues that those with behavioral health problems pose.
We've talked on this show about what was called the Memphis model, where social workers accompany the police in those instances. Is that still the cutting edge when it comes to dealing with public safety issues like this? And do we do it in New York City?
So that is one approach, and I think we see many different models of it across the country, these mental health intervention teams or other ways of getting a pair of professional eyes on the situation on the street. And that's something that we very much will be looking at and thinking about when the task force addresses this issue.
And to what extent is the broken windows policy, that is, arresting people for small crimes, which has been going on since the 90s, to have them, in the system already which is supposed to prevent them from going on to bigger crimes because they see that the criminal justice responds to them, system, punishes them. This broken windows policy, does it have the unintended consequences of bringing more low-level mentally ill offenders who commit relatively minor crimes into the criminal justice system than would otherwise be the case?
I think these are all questions that need to be on the table and that we need to sort of understand better who's coming in and why they're coming in. And that's the very reason why we're now starting to look at this across all system points, because the system is a hydraulic system. What happens in one part of the system affects other parts. And so we want to have a very intensive look across every system point in order to ensure that we don't have unintended consequences and that we're dealing with risk appropriately.
Your next category is arraignment, as we go from arrest to arraignment. What happens then, and what options do prosecutors and judges now have available when confronted with an emotionally disturbed alleged offender?
So there are an array of things that happen in the city. The city has really been on kind of the cutting edge of many approaches to dealing, to providing alternatives. We have various kinds of services and alternatives to detention. We have mental health courts and an array of other options. I think what the task force will do is try and take all these different points of light that we have and figure out what can we really do as a system so that instead of having a lot of different pilot projects, we have a coordinated and agreed-upon approach to an entire problem.
And at incarceration, Joseph Ponte, the new head of the City Department of Correction, has referred to his department as deeply troubled. Inmates have died. The mayor and prisoner rights groups want less use of solitary confinement, but attacks on staff are up at the same time. Is the main goal of the task force to try and find alternatives to incarceration for some of the people who are mentally ill who are now going to Rikers and other city jails?
I think that's one piece of it. But as I said, it is a complete system. And so we will very much focus on what happens inside of Rikers and understand better how it is that we can better address the issues of the mentally ill to both protect themselves and staff and to ensure that when they're released back to their neighborhoods that they do not reoffend.
Here's a We have a question coming from a listener in Westchester who says that she's a 30-year social worker and that there's a parallel system with all the same questions with young children with serious mental health problems that are not being addressed, and they end up in the juvenile justice system.
Mm-hmm.
So will the task force address the juvenile justice system as well?
We will, with a sister task force. So Gladys Carrion, who's the commissioner of the Administration for Children's Services, has set up a task force to look at just this issue, as well as issues around the education of those children who are in both the welfare and juvenile justice systems. So while they are not a piece of our task force, we intend to be very closely linked and to have crossover both with our experts and our findings and our results.
Can treatment be mandated either for juveniles or adults, mental health treatment, in addition to or instead of incarceration?
So that is one of the things that these mental health courts address, and that's a body of work, you know, that is being developed.
Is that very controversial? Because you don't want to get into a situation where a court mandates that somebody take a drug, a medication, or do you want to be in that situation and not enough of that is being done?
I think that that's the kind of question that I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer it. I think it's a complicated question, and it's one that mental health courts are addressing every day. But certainly sort of the issue of having mental health care as an alternative to either detention or incarceration is a tool that's been used for some years now and with quite a bit of success.
And release, as we go from arrest to arraignment to incarceration to release, these different moments in the criminal justice system making contact with the mentally ill that you're studying on the task force, release. As I understand it, Kendra's law affords New York State greater ability now to mandate treatment or even detention for the mentally ill when they are released from prison. And yet the parolee who allegedly stabbed those children and had been deemed unfit to stand trial when arrested for attacking his mother didn't qualify. So what do we learn from that?
Well, I think there are an array of ways to deal with release into the community. Kendra's law provides one piece, but there are other pieces that need to be more systematically woven together. So we need to understand better who we're releasing and what their issues are. Is this somebody who is going to need psychotropic drugs immediately upon release? And do we have a system to catch that person and ensure that they are taking their medication? I think it's really a systemic issue and one that we have to address systemically to ensure that we understand who we're releasing and that we have the appropriate treatment and supervision for that person upon release.
And the city is already under court order, if I'm correct, to provide mental health support for prisoners upon release. Is it not?
It is. This is the Brad H. Litigation.
And so what form does that take? And is that working? How much of that is medication? How much of that is psychotherapy, that kind of, you know, emotional support,
right,
and talk therapy? And is it universally available in fact?
So I think, in that situation, what the city is required to do is to have what's called discharge planning and to have appropriate plans for each of the individuals who are released and to ensure that they're connected to the appropriate services within, certain set timelines. And that's something that the city works very hard to do. But there are always pieces that can be improved. And figuring out and sort of getting the reveal codes, the diagnosis, if you will, of sort of what is working well and what are the impediments to doing it better, that's one of the things that we'll look at the task force.
One of our listeners raises a historical question saying, the first governor, Cuomo, closed so many mental hospitals, and that was one of the root causes of this. Do you think so, and do we need more mental hospitals?
So I think that has certainly been an issue that's been raised before. It was a long time ago, and I think we have to look at the population that we have now and understand where people are appropriately treated and what kind of treatment is necessary. So whether or not that then adds up to more mental hospitals, I don't know.
I would really tweak that question and ask, has the state ever done, and do you think your task force might call for it being time to get really serious about what was supposed to be part two back then, when they were closing these psychiatric hospitals where abuses had been revealed and investigative reports and all this stuff. But then there was supposed to be a lot more community-based halfway houses and things like that, where people could live in the community, but they were supposed to get a lot of support. The money that used to go into the psychiatric hospitals for inpatients, you know, letting more people be outpatients, but the supports didn't emerge. And those have been in, you know, great short supply over the decades in New York State. I'm guessing that you agree with that telling of history. Is that one of the bottom line things, and you just need to find the money?
Well, I think we certainly need to understand what kinds of supports we need out there in whatever form it may be. And we're very pleased to have the state participating in this task force, including the state commissioner of mental health. And I think that this is all part of, as you point out, a single systemic approach. And so you can't have one piece without the other. And so what that landscape of supports and treatment will be, that's something that we have to figure out.
When will your task force come back with a report, and should we expect very concrete recommendations that will make headlines for the change that you're going to propose?
So this is a task force that is on in a very aggressive timeline, quite intentionally. Our first meeting is next Friday. We expect to have a report within 100 days. Perhaps more important than even the report and the recommendations is that we anticipate that upon the conclusion of the task force, we will have created a vehicle similar to what the police use for their accountability measurements, a kind of comp stat, to ensure that we move immediately into an implementation stage of some of the key recommendations from the task force.
Elizabeth Glazer is now the co-chair of the Task Force on Behavioral Health and the Criminal Justice System. She is the director of Mayor de Blasio's Office of Criminal Justice. Thank you very much for joining us. Good luck with the work.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian.